This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
President Obama is in Europe asking for money.
He wants them to cough up cash to encourage democracy in the Arab world.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the Marketplace Midday Update from Marketplace.org. And today is Monday, May 23rd.
Coming up, we'll hear just what the president wants the Europeans to do.
We're going to take a look at the race for the White House and find out how different the fundraising picture will be in this economy than it was in 2008.
There's another volcano nobody can pronounce causing problems for airlines in Europe.
And NASA just discovered something it doesn't like.
Those stories and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Pro Online Backup, the automatic backup solution designed for small businesses. Learn more at carbonitepro.com.
President Obama started his six-day European trip today, meeting with Irish leaders in Dublin. But as he moves on to other parts of Europe, he's going to be asking for more cash to help democratic uprisings in the Arab world. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest this morning. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Now, all the problems, of course, going on with European nations there in debt, how's the president's financial request going to be received?
This is going to be tricky. Many Europeans, of course, realize they have a vital interest in stabilizing these economies on their doorstep in North Africa. But as you say, Europe does have financial woes of its own, and they are getting worse.
And today the president is in Ireland, Stephen, which, of course, has been one of the worst hit economies. How are they reacting to his visit there?
Well, in fact, his trip seems to be lifting the gloom a bit, at least in one small corner of Ireland. He's going to his ancestral home, the small village of Moneygall, from whence one of his ancestors emigrated to the US in 1850. Today, Henry Healy, who lives in Moneygall and is Obama's eighth cousin, says the prospect of the president's visit has been a real tonic for the town.
People are coming out of themselves. The doom and gloom is gone around Moneygall. We've forgotten again about the IMF and the EU bailout. We have something to look forward to, something positive.
Sadly, the problems remain, however. An economy that has shrunk by almost 10% over the past 2 years and unemployment at 15%.
Yeah, need some tonic over there. All right, Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Now to the presidential campaign for 2012, former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty will officially announce his candidacy today in Iowa. But the fundraising picture for candidates, just like the economy, will look pretty different compared with the last presidential election back in 2008. For more, let's bring in Larry Sabato, who directs the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, last time around, we were in an economic boom for much of the presidential campaign. How different do you think the money race will be this time around?
Well, it's already obvious that the eventual Republican nominee is going to raise a great deal less than, say, even John McCain did in 2008, and certainly much, much less than the $1 billion that President Obama is expected to bring in.
And will the places that they go for that money be different this time around?
My guess is because of the economic dislocation, probably candidates on both sides actually are going to rely a lot less on small donors and a lot more on the people who can give big money. Surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, they've been much less affected by the economy than have the small donors.
Now, even as the list of candidates on the Republican side has sort of firmed up in the last couple of weeks, a lot of people are talking about maybe there'll be a late entry into the race several months from now, perhaps a New Jersey governor or Chris Christie or someone like that, would they be able to raise enough money that late in the game?
If it's somebody like Chris Christie, the answer is probably yes. That is, one would assume the Republican base would be energized, and part of that energizing element will involve fundraising. If it's someone who's lesser known or doesn't excite the base, then probably not, and that will be a significant differential between Republicans and Democrats.
Larry Sabato, director of the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, Volkswagen is set to open its latest auto plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The plant will assemble thousands of new Passats, and it'll mean 2,000 or more jobs for the region. But Volkswagen will also be paying workers less in wages and benefits than U.S. carmakers do, Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Workers at the Chattanooga plant will earn around $27 an hour when you add together wages and benefits. That's slightly more than half what a worker earns at the three U.S. carmakers. A big reason, VW will be saving on pension payments to its workers.
I think that probably guaranteed pensions are gone the way of carburetors by now.
Michelle Krebs is an auto analyst with Edmunds.com. She says the days of companies guaranteeing retirement benefits for life are over.
We've seen industry-wide a move towards less of the fixed pension versus a 401k type of arrangement.
401ks usually require workers to contribute more for their retirement, reducing the company's overall labor cost, and that savings will represent a competitive challenge for GM and Chrysler, who have already cut costs to come out of bankruptcy. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The publishing industry's biggest trade fair kicks off today. The Book Expo has been around for more than 100 years, though attendance has been slipping. This year, the event is getting a boost from players who aren't exactly in publishing, as Jennifer Collins reports.
For the first time, Apple is meeting with publishers at Book Expo America. Why? It's the iPad.
They sold more in 9 months, more units in 9 months, than Amazon did in 3 years.
Fordham University professor Al Greco says Amazon's Kindle still rules in ebook sales, but Apple has quickly captured 10% of that market.
They are a player in the book publishing industry today, and my guess is they think they're going to become a bigger player down the line.
He says so will lots of other tablets and ebook readers. Orrin Tyker of the American Booksellers Association says to survive, retailers need to know how to operate in the digital marketplace.
We know that some of our customers, some of the time, are going to want to read books digitally, and we're going to want to provide them to them, and that's what we're trying to do.
Tyker says 300 of his members, independently owned bookstores, are now selling ebooks through a partnership with Google. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Sony said this morning it's going to post a $3.2 billion loss for its last fiscal year, thanks mostly to the earthquake in Japan.
And Honda says Japanese workers will be off 14 days because of parts shortages.
More numbers at our website, marketplace.org.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Pro Online Backup, the automatic backup solution designed for small businesses. Carbonite Pro automatically backs up computer files to a secure location with anytime, anywhere access from any computer or smartphone. Learn more at carbonitepro.com.
Now to the marketplace global perspective. Italy has had its debt outlook cut to negative by the ratings agency Standard & Poor's. S&P cited poor growth prospects and excessive borrowing as the reason for the warning. Let's bring in our regular Monday guest, Julia Coronado. She's chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, and she joins us now from New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Italy, where did that come from?
Well, yeah, Italy's finances have not been on a good track for a long time, but we worry less about Italy becoming a basket case the way we've worried about Portugal and Greece and Ireland. And part of the reason for that is while Italy's finances aren't great, they generally don't depend on foreign investors to finance their debt. They largely rely on domestic savers to finance their borrowing. So it makes them a little bit less vulnerable, so we worry less about them from sort of a contagion or domino effect kind of perspective.
And you're comparing Italy to other European countries. What about a comparison with the United States, which has also gotten a warning on its debt from S&P?
Absolutely, and that's a great comparison. The U.S. Has a fiscal situation that certainly rivals Italy's in terms of the fiscal outlook and its relationship to GDP. We also have a terrible and worrisome outlook, and in fact, we are dependent on foreign investors to finance our debt. So in some senses, that makes us more vulnerable. On the other hand, the U.S. enjoys, one, that the dollar is the reserve currency of the world, right. So everybody needs to hold treasuries. And also, we have more institutional credibility, although we certainly seem to be straining that as we go along.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, thanks so much as always.
My pleasure.
There is another erupting Icelandic volcano whose name no one can pronounce. And like its brother, which caused all kinds of European travel problems last year, this one could do the same within the next few days. We've already heard about problems, perhaps, in Britain. The BBC's Rebecca Singer now on whether Europe's ready for another round.
Last time, it was black or white. If any ash was detected, no one was allowed to fly. This time, the ash has more shades of grey. Better forecasting models can identify the size of the cloud and what it's made of. Michael O'Leary is the chief executive of low-cost airline Ryanair. He was especially critical of the blanket shutdowns last year.
We do inspections every time there's a landing. If we notice any dust on the aircraft, then we take appropriate procedures. But there is no ash cloud. By the time it gets to the UK or to continental Europe, the thing is dispersed. That was our experience the last time. And I think the wide-scale airspace shutdowns we saw last year won't be repeated.
And don't expect the airlines to ground their planes at the mere sight of ash. Last year, their profits were hammered when 10 million travellers were left stranded around the world. All eyes are currently on the weather and wind direction, but so far there's no sign of ash over the rest of Europe. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
Well, in the wake of Dominique Strauss-Kahn's resignation, there are new rumblings about who will replace him as head of the IMF. The odds-on favorite is France's Christine Lagarde, but now Mexico has submitted a name.
Yeah, the BBC's Matthew Price is with us from Brussels on why there's so much jockeying for that top job. Hi, Matthew.
Great to be with you, Steve.
Tell us a little bit about Christine Lagarde. What is she known for in France?
Well, in France, she's known as the first woman ever to become a Minister of Economic Affairs in a G8 economy. She's a lawyer by trade. She actually worked in the US for around 20 years. She speaks fluent English, and Forbes magazine ranked her 17th most powerful woman in the world in 2009. So she is a formidable figure.
What about the emerging economies? We have this person from Mexico who perhaps is a candidate. What can they bring to the table?
Yeah, Augustin Carstens, he's their central bank chief. I mean, I think the emerging economies would say, look, the thing they bring to the table is they are a change from the past. Why should the IMF always be headed by a European when you have a much more diverse world economy at the moment, and you have certainly many of the emerging economies appearing to be in much greater financial shape than the already emerged economies?
Bottom line, does it really matter, Matthew?
I think it probably doesn't if the IMF is led in a purely technical way, a very balanced, objective manner. But European leaders are saying it does matter. They say Dominique Strauss-Kahn was a fantastic head of the IMF for Europe because he understood culturally and politically what Europe was going through with its sovereign debt crisis.
The BBC's Matthew Price in Brussels. Matthew, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Now to Bountiful, Utah, where a guy named Josh Farron just bought a house. And when he was inspecting his new garage, Steve, he saw something poking out of a small door in the ceiling.
Yeah.
So he went up to check it out, and he found metal boxes filled with cash.
Oh, wow.
$45,000 worth.
Wow.
Turns out it had been stashed away over many years, not by some Colombian drug lord, but by the...
who just happened to be in Utah.
Right, who just happened to live in Utah, but by the home's former owner, who died last year. And Farron says he'd love to use the money to remodel his new house, but instead, he's going to give it to the former owner's children. Chicago's new mayor, Rahm Emanuel, has only been in office for a week, but he's already trying to tackle an old controversy. He wants to change the way the city doles out money from special taxing districts known as TIFs. Basically, when a big development project occurs, the city is supposed to take the extra tax revenue from increased real estate values and use it to help blighted neighborhoods. But some Chicagoans say TIFs are benefiting developers instead. Alex Keefe of Chicago Public Radio explains.
Visit the trading floor at the Chicago Board of Trade on a busy morning like this, and you'll hear the sounds of one of the world's largest futures markets in action. But lately, it's got some Chicagoans hearing something else. The Board of Trade's parent company recently landed $15 million in TIF money from the city for building improvements, including, yes, a bit of bathroom remodeling. TIF stands for Tax Increment Financing, which is a wonky term for diverting extra revenue away from things like school districts and piping it into economic development. The city has spent tens of millions of TIF dollars to keep companies like Miller Coors and United Airlines downtown. Some community groups say that's an abuse of a program that's supposed to benefit needy neighborhoods. Now, Mayor Emanuel says it's the TIF system that needs some remodeling.
It is for, as originally stated, blighted and economic communities. It's not for downtown.
That could be good news for activists like Amisha Patel.
Had they not gotten a little bit of extra money from the taxpayers to renovate their bathrooms, would they be in trouble? I don't think so. I think we have to really look at, are we getting the best bang for our buck?
Yes, says Jerry Roper, who heads up the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce.
So you want to feed the heartbeat of the city and make sure that we continue to not only attract but retain the companies that are in the central business district.
Emanuel says he'll release more concrete TIF reforms in a few months, so maybe hold off on picking those tile samples. In Chicago, I'm Alex Keefe for Marketplace.
Well, today the price of oil is hovering around 98 bucks a barrel. Hopefully that'll translate to the gas pump. In Hawaii, oil prices factor in far beyond the service station, though. That's because Hawaii gets most of its electricity from crude oil. From the Sustainability Desk, Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports.
A banged-up, very non-electric Kia is parked in front of Hawaii's first public electric vehicle charging station. Annoying if anyone wanted to charge up, but the old Kia doesn't seem to be much of a problem. The value of driving an electric car in Hawaii isn't the same as it is in other places, because most of Hawaii's electricity comes from petroleum, and because electricity from petroleum costs a lot. Residents pay about three times as much for power as the rest of the U.S., and prices have been climbing with oil costs, over 10% in the last year.
We call it kind of the paradise tax.
Kathy Carroll runs an art gallery on the island of Lanai with her husband. She turns off the lights in the gallery when they don't have customers. At home, she uses CFLs, and she uses cold water to wash her clothes.
I'm definitely a better saver with more expensive power.
Carol says she's heard about a neighbor who saves energy by using only headlamps at night to get around. Truth or rumor, hard to know. But high electricity costs have people in Hawaii thinking about how and when they use electricity. According to the International Energy Agency, residents of Hawaii use less energy than most of the rest of us. So is higher-priced energy a good way to cut use?
Higher costs alone aren't necessarily a good thing. They make you conserve some, but they have a disproportionate impact on the poor.
Daniel Kamen works on renewable energy policy at the World Bank. He says by many estimates, electricity in the U.S. is undervalued. But if prices go up, he says you need good policy and education to go with it that helps people cut their energy use.
But higher prices, when combined with thoughtful policies, have proven to be a real recipe for creative innovation, both financially and environmentally.
Hawaii's high prices and its dependence on petroleum have encouraged it to push for more renewable energy sources. The state is looking to the sun, wind, and ocean to produce 40% renewable energy by 2030. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, a Southern California woman is in trouble after trying to sell what she said was a rare piece of moon rock for $1.7 million.
Wow.
Yeah. Moon rocks were brought back from U.S. lunar missions, the Apollo.
So this is an actual moon rock from the moon.
Well, we're not sure. We're
but
not
that's
sure.
What, that's what
this
she's,
is what she's
that's
claiming.
What she's claiming,
yes.
A real moon rock.
And it is illegal to sell these national treasures, right? Because only a limited number of moon rocks came back from the missions. And I think President Nixon, way back in the 70s, like allocated
gave
one moon
out.
Rock. Yeah, he gave them out to like different states, some of which don't even know where their moon rocks are. Anyway, the woman
lost my moon rock in the couch cushion.
The woman tried to sell the rock to an undercover NASA agent. Yeah, there are all kinds of questions, of course, swirling around this case. Jeremy, is the rock really from the moon?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one. How did she get the rock?
Right. Where did she find it?
One question that I keep thinking: when did NASA get undercover agents?
Good. I don't know. Maybe they picked them
what
up.
What does a NASA
undercover?
What does a NASA undercover agent look like? I just don't know.
I wonder if they, yeah, well, they don't wear the astronaut uniforms when they're undercover.
No bubble head or anything like that. That would be conspicuous.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Enjoy your Monday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.